Thank you. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan on community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Conversations for today, Thursday, October 23rd, 2025. On October 25th, 1918, more than 340 people died when the SS Princess Sophia sank after striking Vanderbilt Reef Inland Canal. This Saturday, October 25th, the 107th anniversary of the sinking, a group will gather around the graves of Walter Harper and Francis Wells in Evergreen Cemetery to commemorate Alaska's worst maritime disaster. We chat with Father Blue, Bob Coghill, and Katie Giorgio about this memorial. Also on Saturday, the Bartlett Regional Hospital Real Talk Walk / Run will take place in the morning to honor, share resources, and support around motherhood, pregnancy, birth trauma, and infertility. Sarah Gress and Terry Forst are here to share more. And the Evening at Egan Lecture Series continues out at UAS this Friday night. Dean Karen is here to preview Living on the Edge, the Ecology of Mountain Goats and Avalanches, which will be presented by Kevin White. Live, local, and community-connected conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon here on KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kushtuk-U Bill Fawcett. The word this week is siu.
Siu.
That means rain. And here's a sentence.
Siu. Kunaktak was seitan.
It's really raining. Let's hear it again.
See you.
Rain. Gunas Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Goldbelt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kushtuk O Ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a Southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihua Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Occoquan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Back from the dead after 8 long years. Saturday, October 25th, celebrate Halloween early with KXLL Excellent Radio at the Zombie Walk. Meet at 7 p.m. at Overstreet Park by the Whale Statue, then march downtown to the Alaskan Hotel and Bar for the Haunted Hoedown. It's all ages for the walk and 21 plus for the concert featuring Jessica Muse from American Idol and local faves Meriden and the Prime Cuts, plus a local costume contest and prizes. Support public media, local artists, and live music at the KXLL Zombie Walk this Saturday, 7 p.m.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on the live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Gunachish, I now welcome to the studio. I have Katie Giorgio Wasiati. How are you, Katie?
Very well, Boston. Thanks for having me.
And I also have Bob Coghill in the studio with us. Good to the cheese, Bob.
It's good to have you. Good to be here. And I guess I'm representing the service that we'll have at the cemetery this Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully we might be joined by Father Blue from Holy Trinity as well. He may come. I'm leaving the door open so he can come right into the studio if he makes it this afternoon. This Saturday, they will present and preside over the memorial for those lost when the Princess Sophia sank off the Vanderbilt Reef in Lynn Canal, costing 340 people their lives. It's a maritime disaster, one of the largest or the largest in Alaska's history, which happened 107 years ago in 1918. Well, Gunath Cheese, Shat Ye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here to remember these folks. Let's get the details out of the way. The service is from 12 to 2. Yeah, Bob?
Oh, it'll be at noon. It will not last until 2.
Oh, okay.
It'll be about a 15, 20-minute service.
Okay. So it's a short service. So you don't want to be late.
Yeah. You don't want to be late.
if you're
late, you'll
you'll miss it.
You'll miss the fun.
So it's a quick service.
It's a quick service. It's a traditional Episcopalian noonday service. And then modified for our community, you know, because this is one of the great events, one of the most monumental events that's happened in Juneau, and we'll remember the people, we'll remember the sacrifices of the people of Juneau and all that they did to try to rescue the people of the Princess Sophia.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Katie, you have an interesting history with this because you presided over and worked on an opera about this, the Princess Sophia, and you kind of became an expert. So
yeah.
Can you give us a general sense of what happened to the Princess Sophia and how it got stuck and all the things that you found out in your research?
Sure, yeah. And about 10 years ago or so, I was working with Todd Hunt. And a lot of people here in town know Todd Hunt, and we get up to all sorts of musical trouble together. and Todd came to me and he said, "Hey, I got tipped off that in a few years there's going to be this anniversary of this shipwreck that happened here called the Princess Sophia." I'm like, "I've never heard of this before."
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Yeah, I just learned about it. Everybody died, you know, 350 people, very dramatic style. I think we should do an opera about it." I'm like, "Yeah, of course. Like, it's perfect opera material. You know, everyone dies at the end."
Yeah.
So that launched me and us, Orpheus Project. It was the organization that mounted this project. We commissioned an opera that was written libretto by Dave Hunsicker and music by Emerson Eads, both Alaskans, to commemorate this 100th anniversary. And we did end up premiering it on the 100th anniversary, which was October 25th, 2018. And I could talk a long time about this story, but basically in a nutshell, go back to 1918. This was the waning days of the Klondike Gold Rush. We had communities up and down the Yukon River, these mining communities, and Canadian Pacific Railways, I think I have that name right, ran riverboats along the Yukon River. And they would take people down up the Yukon River, I should say, to Whitehorse, where they would get on trains. And then they would come down on these trains to Skagway. And then they would get on these ships all owned by CPR, Canadian Pacific Railways. Someone correct me if I got that wrong. And then they would get on these ships to be transported to points south. So Juneau, Victoria, the Princess Sophia was home ported in Victoria, British Columbia. And it was also the end of October, okay? So let me just paint the picture. The gold fields weren't producing much. These communities were dying along the Yukon River. Hello, Reverend Blue has joined us.
Yes. Welcome, Father Blue. Gunath Cheese for being here.
Well, thank you for letting me in the room.
Sure.
Of course, absolutely. Welcome. Katie's just giving
just
sort of
the
history
a
little bit here of what's going on. So keep going, Katie.
So we're at the end of October, and a lot of people were leaving the communities, whether it was forever or it was just for the winter, and they were catching the last boat out of Skagway on October 23rd, which is today. And so just imagine hundreds of people getting on these boats on the Yukon River, getting to Whitehorse, getting on the trains, getting on this boat. And this is mad crush of people because it was the last boat out for the winter. And it was totally packed. You know, again, roughly 350 people. And there's some uncertainty about the real number for a variety of reasons. But they all get on there, and it was, again, like business owners and community leaders and families. And They departed Skagway around 10 p.m. on the 23rd in a blinding snowstorm. And I think we all have maybe witnessed what the weather can be like on Lynn Canal, and especially fall and winter storms. And stroke of bad luck, they hit Vanderbilt Reef at about 2 o'clock in the morning on the 24th. Now, if you ever like take the ferry up Lynn Canal, you go right by Vanderbilt Reef. There's a big light on it now, but at the time, of course, there wasn't, and they had very rudimentary navigational ability, but they run right into this rock. But they were high and dry, despite this crazy storm. So they're like, okay, well, we'll radio for help, and they had something like a dozen ships come from Juneau and from Haines to come respond. And because we're like, we got 350 people, we need to get off of this boat. And they tried and tried and tried all sorts of things to try to evacuate people off of this ship. But it was just a terrible storm, Boston. And they made the decision, because they felt like things were secure enough, you know, just wait for the storm to die down. And so
they were doing all of this, trying to save them in this blinding storm. Okay.
Yep. All right. And trying all sorts of tactics. But nothing was going to be safe. Nothing was gonna be, like, remotely safe. And so they just made the call, we're going to wait it out. So the 24th goes by, the 25th comes again, like, you know, they're trying, nothing's working. And the rescue ships, you know, around, you know, it gets dark at, 4 o'clock or something, right? So they decide, we're going to go shelter for the night. We'll come back in the morning, and hopefully the storm will have subsided by then. Well, in the morning they came out, and the ship was gone.
Whoa.
It had sunk. I believe the time was something like around 5 p.m. on the 25th, because it could tell because of when the watches stopped. And every last man, woman, and child died.
Wow, that's amazing. That's
and then of course the community of Juneau responded to this.
Yeah,
trying to retrieve bodies. Most people on the ship were Canadian.
Yeah.
I think there was one person from Juneau actually who was on the ship, and he had gone up to Skagway. He was some sort of tax guy.
Some bureaucrat.
It was some bureaucrat, right? What I came to discover in talking with people around Juneau, very few people were aware of this history that we had, and partly because there weren't really family connections per se, but the people of Juneau who lived here at the time did respond. I mean, everyone basically was like all hands on deck, you know, retrieving the bodies. They were all covered in bunker oil. That's how most people died, actually. It wasn't from the water or the cold or anything. It was from the bunker oil that had just covered everything in the accident. And they kept bodies in the basement of Juneau Drug. There's some kind of fun ghost stories related to that.
Gore. Well, it's an awe-inspiring tale, and I know that there are specific people that are buried in the Evergreen Cemetery, Bob, and we're going to be gathering around a couple of these folks. Can you tell us a little bit about those folks?
We'll be at the cemetery site of the burial site of William Harper, Walter Harper, and his wife, Frances, and that's kind of a... It was kind of a romantic story. They met, they were married in Fort Yukon just a few weeks before, and they were going. He was going off to attend university on the East Coast, and she was a registered nurse with the Episcopal Church, and he had a long association with the Episcopal Church. He was a guide and a translator for Archdeacon Hudson Stuck, and he was. From the area around where Tanana Village is now, and so he
first man he, to climb the mountain.
He was the first man to ascend Mount McKinley, and I was raised in Nenana in that area, and so I always heard the story that Walter Harper was the first to ascend, and then there were some other people with him. So he was the center of the story that I was raised with, and very likely my grandparents knew him.
Yeah. Um,
So,
well, I have a note here. It says Maxine Reichart and Connie Paddock were related to Walter Harper.
Yeah, they were related to Walter Harper. There were he didn't have any children, but he had aunts who had children, and I've known some of those all my life, and in town here we have Maxine and.
And you have a book here. What is this book?
This is a book by Mary Erlander, who is a University of Alaska Fairbanks professor, and she wrote a biography of Walter Harper, Alaska Native son.
Okay.
And it's kind of a romantic story, and of course everything's very romantic if you die at the right time.
That is true. How many people are buried in the Evergreen Cemetery from this sinking? Do we know?
That's a good.
What do you think,
question.
Gordon?
We have a list. It's about 24.
24. Yeah, I remember it was like 21 or 20, somewhere in that range, right?
Yeah,
21, 24.
Yeah. There are several unnamed still.
Oh, okay. Right. Because as Katie said, we don't really know exactly how many people. Interesting to tell that by their bodies being found when the watches stopped, I guess, in the cold water and things like that. That's sort of fascinating. So, Father Blue, welcome again.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming
in.
Good to see you, Bob. So you've been presiding. I know Mary Lou Spartz has been coming in the last few years to tell us about this wonderful memorial that you all do. And you've been presiding over this for how many years have you been presiding over the service?
Probably 12.
12 years,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any personal connection to the Princess Sophia?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I do, as an Alaska Episcopalian, have the highest regard for Walter Harper and Francis. They're sort of saints.
Yeah.
In our way of thinking. And
they were Episcopalian, right?
They were indeed, yeah.
Okay.
And very active, that Walter. He guided Francis Stuck all over the place, and or Hudson Stuck rather, and they it's just a great story of adventure. His life, he was a young man when he died. He was on his way to become a doctor. He wanted to go to the front in the First World War. He was a bit late, but he thought he would be a medical doctor and go out and assist in that. So that's a hook.
Yeah, okay.
And certainly the association with our church is a hook. The marine disaster is still the largest loss of life of any along the west coast of the continent. So it's a huge disaster from that perspective. And
oh, from not just Alaska, you're talking the
whole
west
coast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
And so that's notable,
yeah.
And it was a terrible impact on the city. Imagine having those cadavers floating up months later. It took months to gather them all in, all that they recovered. And I think there's really, besides the romantic aspect, Walter and Francis' courtship and all that was very, very interesting. Tramping around the bush, shooting caribou and bears on their honeymoon, and stocking up the village for the winter.
Yeah.
So it's also kind of pertinent to decision making in crisis, which I think is a timely thing to think about. I think politically in that regard, when is it time to call it a genuine disaster and start trying to save whatever can be saved? The captain, being very prudent and an accomplished mariner, felt safe on the vessel. It was not warranted, but he felt, maybe I can get everyone off here, thinking career and safety of every human being. And the time to try to evacuate and get people off there passed pretty rapidly. It was done before that first evening.
Wow.
Before that first night passed, because the weather kept coming up, and it kept coming up. And we've seen that. I was a craft fisherman in the Bering Sea for almost 30 years, and that happens. And if you're in the middle of a disaster when the weather is rising, well, it's tempting to try to stay safe. And I know several sea stories about people who bailed too soon, which is bound to have been one of their thoughts, because they had had a catastrophe in Puget Sound when people, just a year before that, when people got off too early of a ship that was taking water and died because of that, and the ship survived. Very difficult situation. And how people deal with those is really worthy of analysis over and over again on an annual basis like this. So it's part of the message that we carry is, how do we know? How do we know?
Well, it's really a pleasure to have you all in to talk about this event. Again, it's a very short ceremony. It's about 15 minutes long. It's at noon on this Saturday, October 25th, the 107th anniversary of the Princess Sophia sinking. It's going to be at the Evergreen Cemetery near the gravesite of Walter Harper and Francis Wells. And it's open to anybody.
Everybody
is welcome.
Yes.
And it's happening, and it will happen rain or shine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, follow the main path, you'll find us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Father Blue, Katie Giorgio, and Bob Coghill, thank you so much for coming in today and visiting with us. I really appreciate it. Again, Princess Sophia Memorial this Saturday. Really appreciate y'all being here. Ganesh. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Now we'll hear this week's Our Living Lands. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Last week, we reported on a nickel refinery in Oklahoma that is built on the historic reservation of the Kiowa, Comanche, and Apache tribal nations. But as KOSU's Sarah Lisi reports, Westwind Elements is operating without their consent, which is causing frustration stemming from century-old decisions about tribal sovereignty.
Shut down Westwind!
Let's shut it down!
A half dozen protesters gather at a busy intersection in the southwest Oklahoma city of Lawton. The protesters are united in their fight against a nickel refinery in town called Westwind Elements.
Our city officials have really made a career out of ignoring people like me, like women, women of color, indigenous people, people of color.
That's Kesa Whitley. She's Kiowa and absentee Shawnee. She's also the coalition coordinator of Westwind Resistance, a grassroots organization dedicated to pushing back against Westwind Elements.
We're not defending nature. We are nature defending itself.
One thing that stands in the way of nature's defense is the past itself. Brian Hosmer is an Oklahoma State University history professor.
The problem is power, differential power.
Back in 1867, the Kiowas, Comanches, and Apaches reached an agreement with the federal government in the Medicine Lodge Treaty, which established the boundaries of the KCA Reservation. It says this is their land, and
there could be no changes to the tribal, the reservation domain, absent a three-quarter vote from the males on the reservation.
Through some trickery and manipulation by the federal government, the KCA was ultimately divided up and claimed by indigenous and non-tribal citizens around 1900.
It's one of the biggest land grabs in that era. Yeah, I mean, and this is one of the things that I think is not discussed enough in terms of the history of allotment.
Then Kiowa leader Lone Wolf turned to the federal justice system for relief and lost. Plenary authority was solidified in Lone Wolf's ruling, which means Congress can treat tribal nations as subjects to be governed rather than sovereign entities. Lawrence Spotted Bird is the chairman of the Kiowa tribe.
The only person or the only entity that has plenary authority over any person is God himself, and Congress is not God.
To him and fellow KCA leaders, their reservation is still intact, but there are other roadblocks to fighting against Westwind Elements, too. Comanche Nation Chairman Forrest Tadanipa says that's largely because the tribes don't have what's known as treatment as a state authority, and It's extremely difficult for Oklahoma tribes to get, thanks to a midnight rider that was tacked onto a 2005 appropriations bill.
I think from our tribal members, sometimes they don't understand how stacked the deck is against us.
Not having treatment as a state designation means they don't have the power to set their own water or air quality standards, which could make it harder for industrial companies like Westwind to be built near tribal lands.
And unfortunately, the status quo is not to recognize our sovereignty or our jurisdiction over kind of the broader area. And instead, you know, our jurisdiction has been very cabined to kind of these checkerboard areas.
Back at the protest, cars and semi-trucks pass by the handful of activists exercising their own rights.
By thinking that we have to play their game in their field, that's a part of what's leading to our demise. We as people, as a collective, have to stop that. We're not here to be a part of their system or to even uphold it. We exist outside of it.
Let's shut it down!
Whitley says her ancestors didn't win fights by continuing with this oppressive system. They won by standing against it. For KOSU, I'm Sarah Lisi.
This story is supported by the Earth Journalism Network. Next week, the final feature in this series will highlight what is at stake for both the KCA community and Westwind elements. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The journey to parenthood is nothing short of challenging. Infertility, pregnancy and infant loss, birth trauma, postpartum mental health, motherhood in general. Bartlett Regional Hospital invites those who wish to honor, share resources, have conversation, and seek support to this Saturday's fourth annual Real Talk Walk / Run at the Airport Trail. And here to share more with us are Sarah Grass and Terry Forrest. Gunnath Cheesh, Terry, welcome in. Wasiati, how are you today?
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yes. And Sarah, welcome in. Wasiati, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Excellent. Very happy to be here again.
Yes, thank you so much for coming in. So this, the details of this, we'll just get these out of the way real quick, yeah. And then we can talk about the real reasons why. It's this Saturday, October 25th at the Airport Trail. It starts at 9 a.m. With a toddler trot.
That's right,
and
yeah.
A kid's half mile, followed by a 1 mile walk / 5K run. No registration required. There's t-shirts for the first 30 kids and 30 adults. And this is happening rain or shine.
That's
and
right. Yeah.
Probably rain.
I don't know. We're really hoping. We've
gotten
all
lucky.
Three prior years, mm-hmm. We've gotten lucky and have had a little break in the weather that morning. And so we're crossing our fingers that it continues.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Yes, we'll be doing it either way.
Yeah, so that's yeah. Great. And hope yeah, maybe your event will be the thing that brightens it up and brings the sun to us just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it feels like the 40 days and 40 nights right now. Again, we had it in the summer. It feels like it's happening again. It just is pounding. It's just crazy. Anyway, Sarah, tell me, this is the fourth annual. Tell me how this event came about and why it started. I'm so happy that it's having continued life every year. But let's talk about the beginning. How did it begin?
Yeah, well, it really was born out of bringing attention to the groups that we had begun offering the year prior. So I think this is the fifth going into the sixth year of operating our Real Talk for Mothers support group. we have one for pregnancy and infant loss. And then shortly thereafter, we added one for I think it's called Birth Healing and Reflections, which is meant for providing space for processing birth trauma. And Terry Forrest, who's from Anchor Counseling, that's her business. She and I had been doing those groups, and Terry had this wonderful idea of Bartlett and her business kind of partnering together to bring more awareness to not only our groups and the resources that are available here locally, but these topics on a larger scale.
And so there's no registration, so it's not necessarily a fundraiser. It's really just about a chance to connect and bring people together.
Yeah, there's no, I should clarify, there's no registration required ahead of time. We do have people register at the event more from like waiver purposes for use of the trail.
But there's no fee.
But there's no fee. There's no fee associated with it. It's just about bringing awareness and really building community, like what's happening in our groups that we do together, but also our in-person groups that Bartlett offers. A lot of it is just about building community and support during this phase of life. And then, of course, the group allows for us to bring a lot of awareness to local and kind of larger resources.
Terry, tell me a little bit about anchor counseling and what you do. Is it mostly in this zone of things that you work on? Is that how this started for you?
We have quite a few clinicians with anchor counseling, and so we kind of have specialties in different areas, first responders, just general mental health, and then in the perinatal mental health area. So we have a couple who specialize in that, and both those of us who do have specialties in that area are part of the groups that partner with Bartlett. So we're able to kind of see the needs that are coming in from the community mental health-wise, and the Real Talk Walk was born because we knew not everybody who needs these resources was getting to the groups. Maybe they're not available. Maybe they don't have access to the computer that needs, we do our groups on Zoom. So we thought, you know, the airport trail, that's where people go with their kids anyway. Let's get together and have an event that's kid friendly. We have goodie bags and hot chocolate and all the things. Then maybe that's somewhere that we can connect with people.
It's a pretty easy trail, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. That's great. And so you had this, you're sort of the germ of this idea of creating this walk/run, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It just seemed like one way to have something in the community, you know, a one-time thing to get these resources out there. And Sarah put together a giant table of resources that people can just grab and go. They can read about. There's QR codes, and that helps, you know, if they need something, hopefully this spot is where that they can get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on this flyer, I mean, I mentioned a couple of them in the intro, but we're talking about infant loss, birth trauma, perinatal support, postpartum mental health, birth healing and there's a lot.
Yeah.
Miscarriage, motherhood support, pregnancy, and infertility. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of areas around pregnancy and birth and motherhood. Yeah?
Yeah.
There's a lot. So what are you finding in Juneau? What areas seem to be the most in need of support, I guess I'm trying to find out.
Mm-hmm. I think it, you know, in Juneau matches nationwide statistics, and you know, miscarriages are, it's very high, you know, so there's a lot of people who have experienced that, infertility, and then postpartum mental health rates are pretty high with depression, anxiety, that sort of thing. So I haven't really met a mother that has come in for services that hasn't had kind of a combination even of those factors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even if someone's become a parent, they may have had infertility struggles or miscarriages in the past, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, additionally, October is Infant and Pregnancy Loss Awareness Month, and so that's part of the reason that October is the month that we choose to do this event in, just to bring extra awareness to that topic and the support around it. And, you know, you were mentioning the kind of the season and the darkness. I think part of the reason we landed on this time frame and have stuck with it is, you know, going into the winter, going into, I think, postpartum time frame in particular can be very isolating time frame for people, just by the nature of being home with your little one, and then winter can add to that. So I think we really liked the idea of kind of making people extra aware of all the opportunities for resource, connection, and support that are
absolutely
out there.
Yeah. As it's getting darker, we all have that. The darkness affects us all, but
absolutely,
I'm imagining with postpartum and things, it can even be worse.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of the things you mentioned is that, you know, Sarah, that the a lot of people who might need the services or who know people who might need the services don't know about the services. And that's one reason to come on the radio, talk about this event, have this event in the first place.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious about how do people, if you are someone who is affected by this or you know someone who may be affected by this, how do you find the resources? Where do we begin to go?
Mm-hmm. I've been pleased how successful I feel like it's been in just in recent months even. I've known people that have, you know, kind of seen us at the hospital and the crew of people that I work with, our team, as a resource, right? Like if they have something like that going on within their family or within their friends, they have outreached us multiple different ways to look for those connections for we're not really sure where to start, what do we do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we might not always have immediate connection available, but we do generally have pretty good ideas on where to connect people, whether that's with counselors or it's so different situationally.
Every case
sometimes
is different.
People are looking for, you know, not necessarily a face-to-face thing, but we also support a lot of Southeast Alaska, so sometimes people are in more remote locations and they are looking for more of a telehealth service or joining one of our virtual groups.
I guess I'm curious if people have to be referred to you through their primary doctor,
no.
Or can they just reach out to the service, and how would they do that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. If they're looking to connect with our programming supports, which is, you know, lots of in-person groups, lots of online groups, the best way to find us is just through our website. So the Bartlett website has a calendar that's pretty accessible on their main page. I think it's just...
It's one of those
buttons. One of those buttons, and you can get to it multiple different ways. But if you just go to the calendar, all of our many events are easy to find on the calendar. Or if they kind of dig around on the kind of the birth center website of Bartlett.
The sub of Bartlett,
There's a whole listing of all of our many groups and classes. And all of the things that we offer to the community are free, and they're very easy for people to locate there, find out more information about them, and sign up. And if they have further questions or want more details, they can always email me or call me and get more details.
And your details are on the website.
Yep.
And I think the best way sometimes with big websites, you get lost in the menus. So put into your favorite search engine, like Bartlett Regional Hospital Birthing Services or Birthing Support, and I'm sure that will get you to the right page.
Absolutely.
And to the contact information.
Yeah. Yep.
And can people also reach out to Anchor Counseling directly, mm-hmm. or is it more through these programs,
nope.
Terry?
It can be directly. Yep.
Okay.
No referral needed. Anytime you go to the phone number or the email or the website, it comes directly to me, and I assign people based on the needs.
And again, you don't have to necessarily go through a primary.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, you can just reach out. So if you know someone or you yourself are going through some of these things, definitely you want to reach out. And what's the website for you?
AnchorCounselingConsulting.com.
Easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Easy. AnchorCounselingConsulting.com. You got that one early, I guess. That's nice. That's good. So that's great. So this, tell me a little bit more about what will be happening on Saturday. That I know we described it a little bit, but tell me what people can expect.
Yeah, it's very casual.
Okay.
Yeah, so the previous 3 years we've had between 75 and 100 people show up. I expect it to be probably pretty similar numbers, although more would be great. If more people want to show up, that's great. It's usually pretty fun. We've usually got some music playing to kind of keep people entertained as everybody's, you know, doing paperwork, getting T-shirts. We do have usually some bibs, like race bibs, and provide some markers and things. People are usually writing down not only their names, but sometimes names of people that they're walking in memory of.
Okay.
And then we kind of just gather everybody up, corral children. And, you know, what's been really lovely to see in the past is all these groups are virtual, and not all of the groups that we offer at Bartlett, but these groups that Terry and I host together are virtual. And so, you know, it's been very nice to see people in person show up and make connections with each other. And, you know, friends sometimes make new connections with people that are there, start up a conversation, build a connection, and walk and have a conversation the whole time they're walking about shared experience.
So, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting once the toddler trot starts. You get all the kids at the line, and
that's probably
the
cutest thing ever.
It's the cutest. We, you know, whistle blows and they head off just a very short little a bit, and then come back and every kid gets a medal, and then we start the next one, which is a little bit longer, mm-hmm. and then the adults and mm-hmm. any kids who want to do the 1 mile or 5K. So I like how it has, you know, 1 year olds who are just learning to walk all the way to like pretty experienced adventurous racers who are looking for a great 5K time, mm-hmm. and everyone mm-hmm. in between.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. That is fantastic. What a cool event. I'm glad that it's continuing, right?
Yeah,
that it's there, that it continues, and that this support is there. For is there any, like, besides getting a call to you all and getting into a group, are there online resources that you can direct people to that they might want to do some research on,
yeah.
whether they're maybe trying to get pregnant or they're having issues with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where would we go?
Postpartum Support International is kind of the biggest one. PSI is online, and there's just
tremendous amount of resources there for
national groups, things for dads, things for adoptive families, foster families, just kind of all the different ways in which parenthood can start.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's fantastic. I'm glad this event is happening. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us about it. It is the Real Walk, Real Talk, walk/run.
Yes.
And it's happening this Saturday, October 25th at the Airport Trail. It starts at 9 a.m. with a cute little toddler trot. So bring out your kiddos. And then also a kid's half mile, followed by, so that's for a little bit older kids, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of, yeah, what that is. I want to see, like, the two-year-olds.
Yeah, that's the trot. But
you could show up right at nine to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, trotting down the lane. That's kind of funny. And then there's also a one-mile walk / 5K run. No registration required in advance. You'll be required to register when you get there.
Yeah.
More for informational purposes. No fee for this. And it is an awesome event that's happening this Saturday. Sarah Grass, Terry Forrest, thank you so much for coming in and telling us all about it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
We appreciate you having us. Yeah, thank you.
Sheesh. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Hanson Grass, ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk are ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak. Gunish cheesh.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Scientists who work in Svalbard, Norway, in the high Arctic, know it's one of the fastest warming places on Earth. And yet, James Bradley of the Mediterranean Institute of Oceanography said he was still shocked by the weather conditions that he and his team encountered there in February.
We saw vast pools of meltwater, so we would ordinarily never expect to see water in its liquid form in the middle of winter in Svalbard. We usually encounter a deep snowpack of maybe a meter or 2 meters that covers the whole tundra and covers all of the mountains and covers all of the glaciers.
Bradley studies how microbes survive in extreme environments. On this trip, he'd planned to sample freshly fallen snow and to drill through the frozen ground to collect soil samples.
But instead of snow, we had days of rain.
And the ground had thawed so much that they could scoop up the soil with a spoon.
We spent a week under this intense warmth, watching the snowpack disappear, watching the tundra become exposed. And as researchers and scientists, we were really feeling the weight of the implications of this kind of event.
So for people who live and work in Svalbard, the signs of rapid climate change are unmistakable. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
I could argue with a statue, still think I won. I've been holding back a promise and holding at a gun. I've been lying to my parents about how much I run. But that is not the worst thing I've done. Family is a contract no one ever signed. And I think love is eyes wide open, true hate is blind. And I've been hiding from my friends, but but none of them are prime. I never learned to take a hit, but I'm trying. Watch another movie about living the same day over and over, about some trouble getting sober, about trading places with another, about some enemy turned lover, about the realities of war, or learning what we're fighting for. I'm not dreaming anymore. I'm not dreaming anymore.
That's little Josh Fortenberry with Groundhog from his new album, Tidy Memorial. You can check out the interview we did where he played a couple songs here on the radio, but also go to any of the live streaming services to check out Tidy Memorial. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Evening at Egan Lecture Series continues this Friday night out at UAS with Living on the Edge, the Ecology of Mountain Goats and Avalanches. It's presented by Kevin White, and here to share more with us today is Dean of the Arts and Humanities, Karen Salkaitis. Good to the cheese. Karen, wasiati, how are you?
I'm doing well, Boston. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks so much. So now, is the Evening at Egan series part of the humanities department?
So I'm the Dean of the Arts and Sciences, right?
Oh, Arts and Sciences.
It's Arts and Sciences. Okay, okay. Yeah. And so Arts and Sciences a couple of years ago decided to kind of really take over Evening at Egan. Many years ago, it was put on by the Chancellor's Office. And I think at some point, I was probably Karen Carey, actually, who said to me, you know, it seems like a lot of these lectures are arts and sciences based. So what Arts and Sciences like to really kind of grab this and take it over. And we said, yeah, 100%. And so I decided to, originally we sort of put out an RFP to our faculty, and then we really made it a little larger. We had a speaker come down from Anchorage. We've had some speakers from kind of all over Southeast. We mm-hmm. had a speaker from Sitka. And so some of them are our faculty and some of them are sort of Alaska-wide. We'd welcome speakers if we had a speaker from out of state who said, I really want to come do this, right? But a lot of it is our folks really talking about the things that they do within arts and sciences. But arts and sciences, remember, Boston, is it's humanities, it's social sciences, natural sciences. I also have the Department of Business in Arts and Sciences, mm-hmm. and we have the Alaska Coastal Rainforest
Center. Oh, right, yeah.
So the ACRC sort of lives in arts and sciences as a partnership between the Forest Service and arts and sciences.
Wow, you have a big job.
I do. It is a big job. I love my job.
So how do you, before we talk about this Fridays, I'm just curious, how do you decide the programming each year? Do you think about what's going on? I know like the last one was all about the Mendenhall Glacier flood, and that's really awesome to see that. But how do you decide something about like this one on Friday, the Ecology of Mountain Goats and Avalanches? Where does that come from?
You know, sometimes people, so we do put out an RFP every year. So we put out this call for proposals and we vet them and we look at them. Sometimes it's people who, you know, Vu, the guy who made the film for our first one. That one came about in a really interesting way because he met our chancellor, I think, at like a coffee shop and they started talking and she said, do you know that our dean came from the world of acting in Chicago? And then Vu and I sat down and he said, do you want a link to my film? Aww. And I watched his documentary film and I was like, come on with this film. We need to show this film.
Right.
And so sometimes they come about in really interesting ways like that where I just feel like somebody really should do an Evening at Egan. And then sometimes it's people who approach us. Sometimes it's faculty members who I know are doing really interesting work or who just have a story to tell. Sometimes I know it's something like the Mendenhall Glacier where it's really going to benefit the Juneau community in some way. It's something they should know about. This one, Dr. Kevin White, He wanted to do one, and we wanted him to do one. He's an accomplished wildlife biologist. He's got more than 20 years of experience studying mountain goats and moose, by the way, in Southeast Alaska. And he's worked with the Department of Fish and Game before he came to work at UAS. And his presentation, by the way, I have been told from Dr. Aaron Hood, who everybody knows and loves from working on the glacier, that this presentation is going to feature stunning photographs of mountain goats, like in their habitat, up on the mountain, in the snow. And so I think if the – I know the Juneau community, by the way, Boston, packed the house for the last lecture, which was so cool to see. We had to have an overflow room.
Excellent.
I know. It's like so great to have the community really come out and engage with us. That's the whole point of this. It's one of the reasons that I always come on the radio and talk about these events. And I always say, like, come get the cookies and the coffee. Like, live stream is great, but we want to see you, Juno. We want you to be in our spaces. We want you to engage with us and our speakers. It's so great to have the conversations in person. But I'm going to promise you some stunning photos. And we're really going to talk about who doesn't love mountain goats, Boston?
I know. Absolutely.
Right?
I do want to mention that for the whole schedule, the best thing to do is put into your search engine of choice, Evening at Egan UAS. It'll
yes.
take you right to the page. It shows you the full schedule. These are always at 7 o'clock on
yep.
Friday nights.
And they're free.
And they're free. and as Karen mentioned, if you can't make it, you want to make it because you want the cookies and you also want the live experience and
yep.
the being in community with other people. But if yep. you can't make it, they are also archived on the YouTube page. So that's a good way to also catch up with previous ones you may have missed. Or
yeah.
if you get turned away because the house is packed, that's a potential issue as well. But you can always catch it. And there's a few more left. We're going to talk about this one a little bit more.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about what he's going to be talking about.
Yeah, so I was asking actually Aaron Hood about it because Aaron Hood has been involved with Dr. White in his research. And Aaron said the focus is really going to be about the impact of snow avalanches on the mountain goat populations. He's also going to touch more broadly on how the changing environmental conditions are likely to impact mountain goat populations in the future, right? So these goats are trying to escape predators, you know, so like wolves and whatnot. And so they're having to really navigate these very difficult terrains, which puts them in these dangerous situations with these snow avalanches. And that as avalanches come down, how do the avalanches themselves impact both kind of the face of the mountain, how do the avalanches change our terrain? And then also, how's our own environment changing? You know, and how does that impact the mountain goats themselves?
Wow.
And you're also going to see some really cool photos in
yeah.
the process. So I think people are going to have a great time
yeah,
talking with Dr. White.
Because I imagine, you know, you think about it when you see the goat, you see him, you're like, how did they get up there?
I
Obviously,
know.
They're up there to escape predators. But then I didn't even think about the potential of in our climate where the snow
yeah.
happens and the avalanches happen and it affects where they can go. Where they can get to,
yeah.
and then that affects the entire sort of ecological system, right?
Yeah,
so that's
right.
wow, what a fascinating talk.
I know when I've been hiking up Roberts, right? I've seen them
yeah.
up there.
Yeah,
and I'm always like, oh, the mountain goats. You know,
yeah.
I'm taking photos of them, but I never thought about these things either. So I'm really curious to interact with Dr. White and see what he has to say about these populations that you know we're also interested in when we're hiking.
And just for people's knowledge, they're usually about an hour.
Yeah,
so?
Yep, that's exactly
so?
Right. We try to plan the whole evening to be about an hour.
Okay, great. And this one's going to be at the where's this going to be in the library or
it's going to be in the lecture
the
hall,
lecture
which
hall.
Is inside Egan.
Okay.
So when you come into Egan, the lecture hall's on the lower level.
Okay, that's mm-hmm. where people would want to go on a Friday night at 7 o'clock.
That's right.
So tell me what is left in the season. This is a fall series.
Yeah,
let's
fall
preview
series.
The next couple that you have.
So there'll be two more, and one is going to be on Friday, November 14th with Dr. Logan Berner, who I think this story is so cool. He was an undergrad student with like somebody like Aaron Hood, right? Again, who did the last lecture on the glacier. So Logan was a student of Aaron's, went off, got his degrees, got his graduate degree, and this is his first year back with us as a professor. And he's a professor in forest ecology, things like that. He's going to talk about Arctic ecosystems in a warming world. So he's going to talk about how climate change is really affecting the Arctic and Arctic environment. So like what new plant life is all of a sudden springing up in the Arctic and how is that affecting wildlife? And his research is so cool. He's worked in Alaska. He's worked in Canada. He's worked in Finland and Russia. So he's really going to talk about climate change. And I'm super excited. Logan, by the way, is just a great speaker. I listened to him do a lecture at the ACRC, the Alaska Coastal Rainforest Center, last year before he became one of our professors. And I was so drawn in. He's an excellent speaker. So I think people are going to love that lecture.
And then I know he was on the show for that lecture, and I remember him. Very engaging presence, so you don't want to miss that one. And that's
fantastic.
You said that's November 14th?
That's November 14th,
okay.
Yep.
And then let me do it. The last
do
one.
Do it.
The Winter Fire Showcase.
Oh, Lily would be so proud of you. So proud.
Us, yeah.
That is Friday, December 12th, and that is Emily Wall, Ernestine Hayes, Lily Hope, and yours truly.
Right on. And that will be, we'll be previewing that as we get closer to those dates. But the one you want to know about is this Friday, Dr. Kevin White, who's going to be doing a talk called Living on the Edge, the Ecology of Mountain Goats and Avalanches. It's at 7 o'clock this Friday, October 24th, out at the UAS Lecture Hall. It's the Evening at Egan series from UAS. Excellent. Dean Karen, thank you so much for coming in. Is there anything else in the world of the arts and sciences that you want to mention that's going on at UAS?
You know, I would actually like to mention right after this evening at Egan, the next day we're having an open house at UAS.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, and I think people should know about that. We're really encouraging people come out. UAS is hosting an open house on the Juneau campus on October 25th. Really want community members, prospective students, come explore the campus. And it's between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m., really like a choose-your-own-adventure format because so many departments are open and lots of faculty on campus. You can really like watch some departments doing some really cool things for prospective students. I think you should just, if you're at all curious about UAS, come check us out. You're going to meet professors. You're going to tour state-of-the-art classrooms. If you have not seen the brand new science building, Octahit, that's where I'm going to be. And I got to design a bunch of things in that building, which who lets a dean do that? I don't know, but UAS did. Come meet me there.
That's so cool. Dean Karen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Gwyneth Cheech, the Evening at Egan series. Put it in your favorite search engine of choice, Evening at Egan at UAS, and you'll find out all about it. Really appreciate you being here
Thanks
today.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Local stories, local events, local connection made possible by you via your donation and membership at ktoo.org. Gwyneth Cheech. On tomorrow's show, a preview of Earl's Haunted Garage. Also, the high school Creepy Crawly event and the Rocky Horror 50th Anniversary and Shadowcast event at the Gold Town. It's basically the Juneau Afternoon Halloween Spectacular. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. You can find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juneau Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Cheryl Snyder. Gwyneth Cheech!